Hey, Luke, I need to borrow a couple radios.
Are you going yet?
YouTube is having major problems.
Censorship.
Are you on the live, though?
So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for another live. We're a little bit late because YouTube has been having a little bit of trouble with our live stream, which is incredibly appropriate because we're talking about radios. We're talking about the need for decentralized communication because sometimes the large communications platforms have hiccups and have issues, kind of like apparently YouTube tonight. So, one of the things that we're going to cover is analog radios, digital radios, DMR radios, and David Botkin is going to help us program some DMR radios, specifically Hiteras. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the advantages of a Hitera radio over, I guess, the more open DMR standard radios, like, let's see, the TYT or the... or the Anytone radios that I have. But
yes.
Real quick, welcome to T-Rex Talk. You can listen to this as a podcast, or you can watch this on YouTube. And this one is actually going to have some visual stuff. So I think it is actually, if we don't get kicked off of YouTube anytime soon, it's probably worth trying to watch this one on YouTube if you really want to see how the DMR programming process works, because we're going to do that live.
Yeah, but we should be able to switch over to this laptop and actually look at it. So we've done some videos in the past on radios, and it's a really useful thing to know how to do, use radios. I think a lot of people haven't really put the pieces together for recognizing that, you know, they have these guns, and as they start thinking about them as self-defense tools, you know, one of the most basic things is if you're going to do something, you probably get more benefit doing that thing as a team. And so, you know, the rule of the gunfight is bring a gun and bring all your friends with a gun, right? So one of the other rules of the gunfight is shoot, move, communicate. And these tools are for helping you communicate with those other people with guns. So that's why we're interested in it. They also have other uses, you know, at the range. They're good for coordinating stuff and good for safety. Doing stuff in the shop, like labeling all the breakers in the building. That's something that needs a set of radios to communicate with people. There's just a lot of good, useful reasons to have radios. Cell phones are basically a form of radio, but like Isaac was just talking about, you know, part of what makes them awesome is the whole grid of
complicated
of repeaters, basically, you know, the cell towers. But if those go down, suddenly your fantastic, amazing radio is useless. It has absolutely no way to work unless you have some infrastructure. And that's where traditional radios, analog or digital, really start to shine. So where do you want to go? You want to just dive straight into programming, or?
Somebody in the chat pointed out that a communication disruption can mean only one thing, invasion. That's an excellent point. But it could actually mean other stuff. For example,
traditional communications difficulties.
Well, I was about to say we're in the middle of a small storm right now, but we're in rural Tennessee. We lose power several times a year due to storms. If it lasts longer than a few hours, we generally use cell phones. So we're not talking necessarily about doomsday scenarios, right? Because there's plenty of natural disasters that cause communications to go down. But speaking of doomsday scenarios, somebody is asking, why are we silent on the ATF and pistols? We're actually not. Go back a couple of videos and watch the one on resisting tyranny. I'll talk. You'll see me talking about pistols and the ATF.
Right.
I'm actually surprised that video is still up. But
also, there's new news, sort of, on the ATF thing. But what we've been observing about the ATF for the last couple of years is they are master wafflers. We should actually get a waffle iron for the shop and write and put the letters ATF on it. I mean, they vacillate.
It's just right. This waffle iron kills dogs.
Yeah, it's like they send a cease and desist to Q, say stop doing this thing, and then they send a temporary stay on that cease and desist. Like, you can keep making them for another 60 days while we figure out what on earth we're doing. So they're in the middle of this incredible vacillation and waffling, and when they actually publish stuff, that's when things will start to get more lively. But they've gone back and forth, and
so now I stand by everything that we said a couple weeks ago, which was the illegitimacy of the ATF and of the NFA and reasons why they should go away. That is the case regardless of which way they decide to waffle next week on pistol braces. But what they're actually saying about pistol braces is not clear. So we're not diving into that super deeply, but it's always fine to have a cursory statement saying the ATF has no business existing, the NFA has no business existing, short barrel rifles have no business being on the NFA, even if it did exist, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. We think the ATF sounds like a fantastic store to go to.
Do you remember, it's actually kind of annoying to me, I used to try to call them the BATFE all the time on purpose because they were trying so hard to be a three-letter agency. A serious big boy agency, and they didn't really want to be the BATF. Then they became the BATFE, and I have tried to call them by all five letters all the time, but it's actually very difficult.
Well, they're the redheaded stepchild of the federal government. You know, they're the agency that never has a director, you know, because no one can get confirmed, and so they just sit there with only an acting director. You know, they don't really have a place at the table. It's
such a weird thing. Like, they regulate stuff that's illegal. But it's not entirely illegal if you just pay. So it's a very strange part of the Department of Justice that has no business existing, has no business regulating the things that it technically regulates, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So let's go back to communication. So there's three types of communication that I think are really important. There's the first is just listening. Just being able to listen to radio traffic that exists is extremely important. So the ability to listen to weather radio, the ability to use a police scanner to listen to stuff, the ability to just have a shortwave radio receiver like this one that you can use to just tune in and listen to stuff. Listening to radio is way easier than transmitting. Yep. It's always legal and you will learn stuff from it. So passively gathering intelligence using radio receivers is always a good idea. Then the second type of radio communication is when you are broadcasting and you're not supposed to use that word if you're on an amateur frequency. You're supposed to transmit, not broadcast. But broadcasting a message out, I think this is actually grammatically correct. Say broadcasting a message out, trying to see who else is out there in the form of an emergency. Does anybody need help? Can anybody help me? Finding strangers is something that you want to be able to do in certain emergency situations. Yep. And when you want to find strangers, you want to be able to use your amateur radio license and your amateur radio equipment to do that.
Yep.
The third type of communication is when you already have a communications plan with somebody that you know, and you want to talk to them specifically using a pre-coordinated setup and pre-coordinated communication network. And for that, I'm beginning to lean a little bit away from amateur radio and a little bit into business band license and business radios and commercial radios. Yeah. So we can talk a little bit more about why we've gone that way, but people are probably curious about that because we are not using ham radios for this particular programming demonstration. We are using commercial Hytera radios, even though they are capable of broadcasting some of these are capable of broadcasting on the amateur VHF and VHF bands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think what we'll do, Charles, if you can flip over to my computer monitor, I'm going to start off by just sort of talking real briefly about the Baofengs and kind of what's involved in programming those. Super easy to program. I should have brought my programming cable so I could actually load one up. But I went to the internet, found a super easy tutorial. And basically what you do is you get your Baofeng. It has a port on the side. You can see those little pins right there. That plugs into the radio. This plugs into your computer, as you would expect. And then you use a program called Chirp. Baofeng also has their own proprietary software, but I would use Chirp. You download from the radio by using the COM port that cable simulates. You tell Chirp what radio you're connecting to, and then it pulls down the frequencies that are programmed into that radio. And at that point, it's all pretty simple, just punching in the frequency you want. So these are all UHF freaks right here. And a radio like the UV-5R is a dual bander. It can do UHF and VHF. And it covers a bunch of the ham spectrum and outside the ham spectrum. And then other radios like the BF-888, which is about a $10 radio, it's only UHF. And those are great.
Right here.
Yeah. So basically all these different settings. Yeah. So this is a BF888. They're about $10.
Yeah.
They're like $10. I just bought some recently, and we've been using these around, you know, for farm work and all kinds of stuff.
I would say it's still worth having a bunch of those because even though I'm going to use one of these Hytera radios to communicate with T-Rex people,
right?
Having a bunch of these in my house so that I can hand them out to my neighbors if there is an emergency or a disaster is something that I want to be able to do. I don't necessarily trust them enough to hand them an expensive radio with all of our encryption tied into it.
Right.
But handing them a $10 radio that can reach me simply and easily is very handy.
So these are, there's all kinds of rules with the FCC over what radios can can broadcast or transmit on what areas of the spectrum, and they have these things for type approval of radios, like these radios are type approved under this rule, and this one's this rule. So these radios, like this Motorola right here, if I pop it open, it will probably, I'm just going to guess, I don't even know. It'll probably say that it's type 90 approved. I'm not actually seeing that, but it's a commercial radio, so that's basically what it is. And different rules, like if you're on FRS or GMRS or HAM or MERS or commercial, they have different rules for what kind of radio need. Technically, this doesn't quite match the rules for something like using FRS or GMRS frequencies. They just changed the rules on those, though, and I'm still trying to figure out how it changed. Like they upped, FRS is family radio service. Like that's when you go to Walmart and you buy bubble pack radios. They just upped the power on those from like half a watt to 2 watts, which is kind of cool. And if they changed some other rules, technically, I don't think it would be completely proper to program in FRS frequencies on one of these and throw it on there. But practically, it's really close. You can do GMRS frequencies on this. And again, not quite right because this isn't technically Part 90 certified, but it's super close. Not telling you to break any rules, just making some technical observations. They totally go on those frequencies. And they're broadly consistent with the thing. Now, if you can you grab that little mini radio box?
These little Zass domes?
Yeah. I think this would actually work because it has a fixed antenna.
Which is one of the rules.
Which is one of the rules.
I would recommend.
I think this is an FRS legal radio. I'm not, again, not 100% sure because I need to go scrub through those rules some more. But it's one of those things where if you're using the frequencies as they were intended as a family thing and you're using low power and you're not causing much of disruption and you're using a quality enough radio that it's not bleeding over into other people's space and stuff, you're probably fine. But
also, if it's an emergency.
I'm not a lawyer. I'm not your lawyer.
I would say a good YouTube channel to go check out is the Ham Radio Crash Course.
Yeah.
Hashnazi is the guy who runs that channel and produces all the content. He dives deeply into some of this radio minutia.
Right.
And he has a bunch of videos where he walks through exactly how to set up different radios and what they're for. So highly recommend that you go to experts, not us. We're not actually experts, but we can point you in the direction of some experts.
And we've been playing around with some of these radios for a number of years. We got our ham radio license is like 10 years.
It's almost 11 years ago, I think.
Long time ago. We've been playing with radios for a long time.
Like, update.
And a lot of these radios, these cheap ones, you might think, well, they're cheap, they're Chinese garbage. Not exactly. Like, I have one of these, I'm not sure if it's this one, and my children took them to the woods and lost one. And either a year or two later, I'm not sure which, because I don't remember if it was one complete, it was like they lost it in the fall, and we found it in the next fall, or maybe it was two falls later, I'm not sure, but it still worked. We had to replace the battery, but that radio actually still worked, even after being out in the elements for a year or two. You know, these little BF888s, they will die eventually. If you put them on a charger and you leave them on continuously for about a year, some reason they burn out.
Which is kind of what I do with those.
Which is kind of what we do with those. These are great. They're super cheap. If you don't do anything else, you should get a handful of them, is what I would recommend.
Now, there's a ton of people asking about range.
Yes.
And this brings me back to kind of the three different kinds of communication.
That'd be a UV5R.
And one of the things that is important to remember is that handheld radios do not let you talk very far. And the difference between a $10 radio and a $300 radio, the antenna is what matters most. There isn't going to be a massive difference between these, except for the fact that The digital codec does get you a little bit of extra efficiency and a little bit of extra error correction, and that buys you a little bit of extra room. But handheld radios are not a thing that you use to talk to people who are 50 miles away, mm-mm, or 20 miles away, not or 10 miles away. Not without a repeater. Now, you can get repeaters, but let me break it down into three different kinds of communication again. You have short range, which is like a mile or two. Are we a mile apart?
We're less than a mile.
We're less than a mile apart, and we're fairly close to the shop, which means that we can talk to each other really easily using handheld radios. We can almost talk to the shop.
I can.
Talk to the shop. You can't talk to people that are all the way in the back of the shop because
it's a big, huge metal Faraday cage.
Metal building, and so that doesn't work very well. But within a bubble of a mile or two, handheld radios work for coordinating your team and for talking to your neighbors and doing stuff inside a mile or two.
But it's not a simple bubble. Like, I think that's kind of how people think of it, and they think more power, more range. It's not. So, like, I remember doing tests early on and experimenting with VHF versus UHF, and you know, I could go about a mile from our house in very hilly terrain, maybe a little less than that, and this radio would work and this one wouldn't. And then, you know, UHF would work and VHF wouldn't. Then I go a little further and, oh, now it's reversed. You have these spots where there's signal effectively and no signal, just like with cell phones. People kind of intuitively know this with cell phones if they live in a rural area, like, oh, I'm going down into a valley, I'm going to lose you.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing with these, except the towers are now in the valleys, not just in the hills, which is how cell towers normally get placed.
And if you want longer range, you need repeaters. And if you're an amateur radio guy, amateur radio clubs are the ones that set up repeaters. But you could set up your own club or your own group, and you could set up your own repeater. Which
we have one over here.
I've got one around here somewhere. Oh, where did I leave it? Now this is specifically a digital Hytera repeater, so you need this thing, which is, what, $1,500 used?
Yeah,
something like that. You need a duplexer, you need a power supply, you need an antenna. You probably want to put it on a tower. You probably want to put the tower on the hill.
Right. So that is something that I actually have not gotten to play with yet. It's still on my to-do list.
Yeah.
But basically, so you have all these fairly inexpensive radios that offer a huge amount of bang for the buck, but they have some deficiencies. You know, the big one is with ham and with FRS and with GMRS and MERS and all that, there is no encryption allowed. With ham radio, you can do digital modes, like DMR or one of the other amateur digital modes, and that kind of sort of works like encryption because it's not easy for someone to just crack and listen to. It's not just, you know, they can buy a UV5R off of, like, anybody can go buy these on Amazon. They're like $25.
And then they can listen to anything that you are saying with one of those.
So that's a downside. You know, there's not a lot of things you can do with it outside of just very simple programming in a frequency and listening or transmitting on that frequency.
And I want to talk about encryption because it's cool to have. It's probably not as cool as you think it is. But even with encryption and digital modes in a commercial radio, you still have the same limitation. These handy talkies here, these HTs, these handheld transceivers, they just don't go very far without a repeater.
Right.
And if you are an amateur radio guy, you're dependent on the repeaters that your amateur clubs are running nearby. But if you have enough people, you can get your own repeater, like we do have. It's not set up.
But you can share the cost.
You can share the cost among the people, and you can potentially make that work.
Yep.
And if we had a big enough hill, and we got a nice antenna, and how many watts is that?
I think that repeater is 50.
So these are going to be around 5 watts. So that repeater with a much better antenna and 10 times the power is going to reach a lot farther.
Yeah.
It's going to connect a lot more radios, and it's going to give us, what's your estimated range with the math that you've been doing? And again, it varies.
I'm going to guess, because where we are in Tennessee, it's super, super hilly, and that's the worst radio terrain. I'm going to guess 5 to 10 miles. You know, you'll have people on a hilltop 10 miles, in a valley maybe 5. That's my guess.
So that, even with the repeater, you're not buying yourself hundreds of miles. You're not even buying yourself very many tens of miles.
Yeah.
Now, if you live in, you know, the right part of Colorado and you're able to put your repeater on top of the Rockies and see it from 50 miles away, that's a little different.
But right.
This is something that is kind of an issue. If you want to talk farther than that, you have to get into HF radio. And you need to, first of all, you have to learn a thing that is very complicated, and you have to buy radios that are a little bit more expensive. This is about the cheapest radio that I would get. This is the Zygu G90, and it's about a $500 radio, which you then need to add a bunch of connectors and things to so that you can do digital modes over it.
Right.
And HF radio is a totally different beast. You put a gigantic antenna on that, and you can talk literally halfway around the world on, I believe this is 10 watts of power. And Morse
using
code.
Things like Morse code.
Morse code or digital modes once you add computers to it. So if your plan is to be able to talk to people in other states, which I think is an important plan, you're not going to do it with these. You're not going to do it with these and a repeater.
Right.
Now, one of the things that people keep bringing up is that there are hotspots for DMR. One of the cool things about DMR as a standard is that it piggybacks over internet networks really easily. So we could take our repeater over here and plug it into the internet and connect it to another repeater 600 miles away in another state. And then our radios could talk.
They would just talk
from the radio to the repeater, and then from the repeater over the internet to another place over here, say. But that requires that the internet work. And one of the whole reasons that I'm interested in digital radio communications is for times when the internet doesn't work. Like a few moments ago when we tried to start this live stream and it wasn't working. So that is something that is really important. All the guys talking about using DMR hotspots that you tie into your own Wi-Fi, that is great for amateur radio stuff. It's great for experiments. It's great for keeping in touch with people. It's great for hobby type stuff, but only if your internet works. And for emergency communications, for MCOM, you need to assume a scenario where the internet isn't working.
Right.
So that's a cool feature of DMR, but it's not necessarily a reason to go with DMR for MCOM.
So let's go back more to the programming side, and first we'll hit one last thing, and that is the licensing thing. So there's all these different ways to do radio with FRS, GMRS, HAM, MERS, whatever, but they all have a lot of limitations on them. No encryption, you know, not all of them allow digital modes, and digital modes are where you really want to go, because like DMR, so when you have a radio like this, let's say you had one licensed frequency. You know, you could have these two radios having a conversation on that frequency, and you would have exactly the ability to have one conversation. DMR, part of what it does is it takes that 12.5 kilohertz bandwidth that it's given, and it splits it into two separate slots. And you can actually have a conversation on slot one and a completely separate independent conversation on slot two. Like literally, two people could be talking on these radios and having a conversation, and two other people could be talking on these radios having a conversation, and it's all the exact same frequency.
And theoretically,
they can do text messaging.
They can do text messaging.
They can transmit GPS coordinates.
And
they
that
can
stuff
do all
should
kinds
go
of stuff.
Further.
Yes.
The text communication should go a lot further than voice. So once we get these things set up, with our repeaters, and we have 10 miles of voice communication, we may have 20 or 30 of text communication.
Yeah.
Which, we live in a very large county, but that still is a lot of direction. That's a lot of distance that we could cover.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I really want to do, I was going to ask you about this earlier, but I'll just do it now. I want to put a mobile radio inside of my car.
Yes.
Which is cool because the mobile radios go up to like 25 watts, and you can put a much larger antenna on your car, and it has the ground plane of the top of the vehicle.
Right.
So that's going to be a lot more powerful. Can I set up a mobile radio in my car to be a crossband repeater and switch my radio just over to a different channel that talks specifically to that crossband repeater that is my mobile radio, and then my mobile radio reaches all the way back to the repeater.
I don't know. So there's a thing called crossband repeaters where you have a radio.
And maybe someone in the chat.
Normally, a radio like this can transmit on one frequency or listen on another frequency, but it can only do one at a time. It can't go full duplex. But there are some radios that are UHF and VHF, and it actually has two separate radios. So it can be receiving on VHF, and while it's receiving on VHF, it actually transmits on UHF. And there's utility for this where, you know, like you have a little handheld radio to talk back to your car, and then your car uses its powerful radio to talk back to the station. And you find things like this being used. They may not be a crossband repeater, but this kind of little miniature repeating activity. Tate makes stuff. Tate is a New Zealand-based radio company. They make a thing for that. It goes on like fire engines and stuff. So firefighters have access to the fire engine, then it radios back to dispatch. And there's some cool stuff like that. So I don't know about DMR and crossband repeaters, but that's kind of cool.
But there's another thing that's not even a crossband repeater, but because there are technically two slots on this radio, yep, on a single, basically the way that it works is, mm-hmm, when you are transmitting, you're only transmitting half of the time. It records audio for a second, and then it compresses that audio down into a packet that takes half a second to send.
Yeah.
And so for every minute that you're broadcasting, you're only sending 30 seconds worth of data, and it's listening for the other 30 seconds. Or the repeater is using that extra 30 seconds to listen for other radio broadcasts.
Yeah.
But one of the things that you can do, not with this radio, but with the 900 series radio, this handheld can be a little repeater because it can hear you talking over there, listen to that, mm-hmm, that 50% talk time, and then use the empty 50% to broadcast it on exactly the same frequency, which is very cool ad hoc thing.
So those single frequency repeaters are a thing. Can these do that? Are you saying you researched that?
Not the 700s or the 500s,
but the 900s. Oh, okay, cool.
But only one. It can't become an endless daisy chain for some reason. I don't fully understand it.
So once you go to start looking at DMR, you start having all these additional features that you can use. You can do things like over-the-air programming, and I think there's some provision for that with analog radios, and I don't know how to do that with a digital radio, but you start getting a lot of features.
And you get to do things like... sorry to interrupt.
Well, go ahead.
You get to do things like... Part of the reason why it's cool to have this time-based... Having two time slots for each... For each radio is cool because you can do stuff like on your repeater. We could set up, for example, this is the way that it would work for T-Rex that makes a lot of sense, is we have stuff that happens inside of the shop and we have stuff that happens outside at the range. And so setting up a talk group for people who are working in the shop and a separate talk group for people that are out at the range makes a lot of sense because now we have the ability to let two groups of people have two completely separate conversations without them interfering with each other on a single repeater on a single a single frequency pair. So there's a bunch of stuff that it gets you that is cool. Also, theoretically, it gets you more battery life because your radio is only transmitting half of the time.
Yep.
And you can override certain radios and break in on conversations if necessary.
Yeah, so there's all kinds of cool stuff they can do. So,
and in our testing, digital has gone farther than analog.
Yes.
Same size antenna, same wattage, greater distance.
So here's two radios that I bought recently. I don't know if you can see the screens, but basically I've got some test frequencies programmed in that we licensed. And I have, if you can see it, no, we probably don't want to mess with the
don't want to mess with focus.
No. Basically, I have one frequency programmed in and a number of talk groups. And I'll explain that when I go to program here. I have another radio that I bought, used, and it still has the old programming from the last user on it. So we'll look at that and play with those frequencies a little bit. I don't really want to show our frequencies.
True.
But
in fact, I was going to point out, it's a little bit of bad OPSEC to tell you guys what radios and repeater we're running.
Yep.
But the value, the educational value, I think, offsets the the security weakness that is happening at this
point. Well, anyway, why don't we do this? Why don't we just dive straight into reading from this radio and starting to poke around with the settings and explaining how they program? Because while analog radios are super simple to program, like you just tell it what frequency you want it to transmit on and a couple other settings and you're done. And any radio with those same settings work. With DMR, you have a whole lot more settings. And so I was actually fairly intimidated when I was looking at it, like, oh, this is going to be very hard to learn, and I don't understand what's going on. And at this point, I have done a number of tests with these radios, and I'm at the point where I can say, I want to do this, and I program it like, yep, that worked. So that's why I feel comfortable actually explaining what I'm doing and why.
I
feel so novice still. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. So we're gonna go ahead and plug this in. Now, some of this stuff is not as user-friendly as I would like. So the first challenge I had with Hyteras was, you know, I plugged the USB cable in and then I tried to load the drivers and none of that worked. You have to install the drivers before you ever plug in the cable or else it simply will not work.
And while you're doing that, let me talk about DMR for a second. Because DMR is based on a Moto Turbo, which is a Motorola thing.
Yep. Or maybe it's, I don't know which came first.
Yeah, it's basically an open standard that is used by a number of different radio companies. Mm-hmm. So there are a bunch of amateur radios that are designed for ham radio guys that use DMR as the codec, the digital codec to talk. And then there's a bunch of commercial radios which also use DMR, but they have certain features that are enableable, like encryption. There are people that have added on to the DMR standard. So for example, one of the things that Hytera radios have is they have something called pseudo trunking, which is something that is built into a Hytera radio and it's built into the Hytera repeater. But
it's super cool.
It's super cool, but what it means is that an amateur DMR radio won't be able to use all of those features.
And a Motorola won't either.
And we're not sure exactly how gracefully all of these things will fail, but that's part of our experiments.
Yeah, and one of the things I haven't tested yet is making third-party, you know, other DMR radios talk with Hyteras. Many brands have some proprietary features that work really well, and pseudo-trunking is one of those cool ones that's really helpful. Okay, so I got my radio plugged in. I did a read operation. It read successfully. And at this point, we're looking at this radio. Come on. Here we go. Okay. So we can double click on it. It tells me stuff about the radio. It tells me what its frequency range is. They sell these in two different frequency ranges. They call them U1, like with UHF, U1 and U2. And basically, they have overlapping coverage. You know, like one is better suited for, it goes like from 400 to 470, and the other one's 450 to 520. And one of them is better for ham radio usage, and one of them is more commercial. But they both overlap in the middle there and can do the traditional business licenses that are available. So, you know, this is a U2 radio, and it tells me the firmware version. Some of these radios I bought, I couldn't program them until I upgraded the firmware. That's kind of its own whole thing. It wasn't hard, but, I had to get the thing and make it all work. And then we have radio settings. You know, there's some common settings for a name for the radio and stuff. And none of this is very important. You can lock the radio. You can give a power on message. Just a whole bunch of different settings. But where it really gets interesting,
it reminds me of messing around inside of Nokia's and Motorola phones back in the day.
You'll notice that it has some features here. Scrambler, basic encrypt, full encrypt Hytera. I think the way it works is you actually pay money to them and they enable the feature remotely. I'm not sure how that works. But those are features you can pay extra for, and I just don't really know how it works. So if we open up more settings, we find zone, channel, digital common, DMR service. This is where, for me, it was pretty complicated at first, but it's actually fairly simple. First, we'll look at digital common, basic. Every radio has a radio ID associated with it, and ideally those radio IDs are all unique. And it actually will let you do stuff like you could have 10 radios talking, and you could have radio, number one talk to radio number seven, and they could have a private conversation that only the two of them could hear. This software lets you do cool stuff like I start with radio number one, and I can say, you know what, next time I write a radio, I want it to automatically call that radio number two. So it has some cool features like that. It also has encryption features. See if we can get that to open here.
You want to talk about encryption now, or do you keep going with the settings?
Well, this is one of the cool things about DMR is it potentially, depending on your radio, lets you have encryption. And these give you 10-character, 32-character, and 64-character encryption. And one of the other cool features, if you look around,
you can add a bunch of keys.
You can add a whole bunch of keys, and you can actually, with some radios, it'll actually randomly rotate through the keys. So you'll key up, it'll transmit with key number seven. The receiving radio hears that, looks through its library of keys, and goes, oh, key seven works. And now you can talk. But the next time you transmit, new keys, new keys, new keys. And so that's a little bit extra security, but we're not going to worry about encryption for
now. That's only going up to 64. Do we have to buy the module to go up to 256?
Yeah, AES 256 is a paid upgrade.
But it is supported by these radios.
I believe so. But I don't know how.
Now, one of the problems with encryption, a lot of people are very annoyed by the fact that you cannot do encryption using your amateur license on amateur bands and amateur radios. I'm annoyed by that too. However, be aware of what it is that you think encryption is going to get you. Encryption means that people cannot listen to what you are saying. But if you are concerned about an enemy finding out stuff about you using your radio, the most useful information that the enemy can find out is how many of you there are and where you are. And they can find that anytime that your radio transmits. Whether the data is encrypted or not, they can see the signal. And direction finding radio equipment is cheap and pretty easy to use. So if I was trying to find where a bunch of guys with encrypted radios were, finding out where they are is just as easy, whether they have encrypted radios or not. So encryption does not buy you invisibility. It buys you a little bit of privacy. By having encrypted radios like this, it means that your next door neighbors who have Baofengs cannot hear what you are saying. But it does mean that any serious enemies can get lots of information about you, even if they can't hear what you're saying. And figuring out what you're saying is actually not going to be that difficult for significant enemies because, well, the encryption on here is just not the best. We don't know that it's particularly robust. Or that it's completely free of any issues.
It's better than nothing. Okay, so there's kind of three main areas you need to program when you're programming a DMR radio. There's contacts, there's channels, and there's zones. With a traditional analog radio, you basically only are programming your frequencies. And you just plug in the frequency, and that's it. You set a couple settings, and you're done. With this, all three of those play together to actually create the experience that you as the user have when you pick up the radio and you select a channel and you actually hit transmit. So you have to get all three of those correctly set up and in sync, sort of, for lack of a better term. So the first thing we have is we have our contacts. And this could be very simple or incredibly complicated. The previous user for this commercial radio that I'm programming had only one contact set up. It was just home, it was a group call, and it had this number. And that was it. So then when we jump over to the next place, which is we go to channels, and we go to digital channels, they had all these different channels programmed in. We'll double click on one here. This is a simplex channel. So these are repeaters. This one is not a repeat, did not use a repeater. We can see their frequency that they had plugged in, 464-500. And that's same on the receive side and the transmit side. So let's start from the top. You have the channel name. Let's make this one of our channels. We'll pretend we're taking over this radio. We'll call this range safety. The next setting is color code. I don't fully understand how this works, but basically you choose.
They have to match.
They all have to match for them to talk. And there's a whole bunch of them. I don't know. So it's part of how it gets encoded. And then you have slot operation. So you have the choice of two different slots. Not all DMR brands can actually talk simplex, that means directly radio to radio, and make use of both of those slots. But typically when they do make use of the two slots, you tell it, I want to use slot one, or I want to use slot two, and it's locked into that. Hytera's pseudo-trunking actually lets it gracefully choose which slot to use. And so you might have 10 talk groups on a channel, on a frequency, and you go to talk on talk group 141, and someone's already talking in slot one, we'll use slot two. And then a minute later you try to transmit, someone's on slot two, we'll use slot one. And it'll automatically do all that very gracefully. But if you select pseudo trunking, as I understand it, other brand radios won't work. But you know what? We only have Hyteras we're playing with, so we'll say pseudo trunking. We can skip through all this. We come down to our frequencies. We'll just keep using their existing frequency. For now, we're not actually going to transmit on it. We have our frequencies here, and then we have our contacts. And this is our range safety channel, so we're going to say range safety. And there's actually some way to do receive group lists. This is interesting. You could actually, I haven't done this yet, but as I understand it, you could actually have a radio that's set up to listen to a whole bunch of different channels or contacts and be able to hear what maintenance is doing and what shipping is doing or whatever. But we'll just leave that as none. And one of the cool things about their software is it has this little help thing that just sits down here at the bottom. And so if you don't know what you're doing, you can just dump over there. We could also flip on encryption if we'd enabled encryption over here. But we haven't. And we'll have, there's a bunch of settings on what power level. You can also set the radio up so you can, the user can select power level. And we also have transmit admit, which means basically if there's another conversation going on and you hit transmit, are you allowed to interrupt? Yes or no? And this radio was set to always allow. You know, you could say, I only want to do it if it's free or if the color code is free. And I haven't really played with these settings, but I do know that the interrupt, you know, always allow works because that's what I've set up so far. Mm-hmm. Now, you might not want that. You might want certain people to be able to interrupt and other people not. You know, maybe you have a safety channel, and if you go to safety, you want safety to be able to interrupt everyone else, but they're the only ones that get to interrupt. And then there's some more settings, which some of these down here are analog settings, like CTCSS and CDCSS. And the channel spacing is locked to 12.5 kilohertz. You don't really get to select that. Most ham radio guys use 25 kilohertz, but basically everyone else is on 12.5 at this point. So we've got this radio channel set up, you know, range safety. And the next place, if we actually want to use this, we need to put this channel that we've created into a zone. So I'm going to flip over here to zones now. So we have our contact that we've created. It's this one is called range safety, but it's actually the number for it is 141. We've got some frequencies here. We've got a name for it. And now we jump over to digital home as the zone. And now we have different zones that we can select. And we have available channels. And we have the channels that are actually being allocated to the radio. And we have range safety here as channel 4 on the radio. So we're going to move that on up. Because we want range safety to be priority number one. Right, Charles?
Safety third.
No, yeah, that's right. That's right. We'll move it down here. No. So at that point, I can say, let's write this back to the radio. And it takes a minute. So while it's doing that, do we have anything we need to talk about? Any interesting questions?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of people. There are a wide variety of folks, a wide variety of skill levels and understanding levels in the comments. So some people who are asking basic questions, some people that are asking advanced questions.
People telling me I'm doing things wrong?
That's fine. I don't know that anyone is super advanced. Otherwise, I would be asking them questions. But right. One of the things that is very fascinating is this talk about encryption. One of the things that is important that some guys are talking about is if you can limit your transmissions, that is going to be the most important thing that you can do. One of the things that people are also talking about is frequency hopping. If you have a frequency hopping radio, you're impossible to find. That was the case back in some of the earlier world wars. But with modern software-defined radios that see the entire radio spectrum at the same time and record it all, They can see the radio transmission hopping through the frequency. They can just watch it happen and grab it all and
piece it back together.
It all pretty easily. Like I can do that personally on this laptop with a $20 SDR. So
yeah, it's kind of like shredders worked really really well until computers and scanners came along.
And then people wrote code that just jigsawed stuff back together.
So. I now have, you can't really see it, but this radio is now set to channel number one on it is range safety. And if we had another radio programmed up with all the exact same settings, it would talk between this one and
it has to be far away to be in focus.
So that's basically it. And if I had a completely different model Hytera, if I had the exact same model Hytera, I could use this code plug that I've generated. That's what this is actually called. This file with all these settings in it is called a code plug. At least that's what it's called in the ham world. I don't know if it's called that in the commercial world, but I assume it is. I could just take this code plug and just go bam, 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 and just clone it onto as many radios as I want. Now, I have another radio here. It's kind of the same. It's the same, but it's a 700 series radio, but it is different. And as I understand it, it would need a whole new code plug generated in order for these two to actually talk with each other. But one of the things that I have played with that's pretty cool is if you get this all set up, you have a bunch of contacts, a bunch of frequencies, a bunch of zones, you can actually export your contacts and export your channels and then re-import those. It exports it as a spreadsheet and then lets you import it. And it takes a lot of the data entry and eliminates it. There's still some setup, like you still have to go through your channels and you have to, when I did it, I still had to assign the contacts to the unique channels. So if you had 100 different channels or something, it would be kind of a pain. But actually, once I started figuring out the triumvirate of these three settings groups and how they played together, suddenly it became a lot simpler. You know, you set up the contacts first, and it doesn't have to be super complicated. You know, in the contact area, you can set up just a group call. Like these guys, they just had one for the whole, whoever had this radio before, they just had one for everything. You know, but you could have, a chat group. Basically, it's a chat group for just one type of topic. And a radio with a screen will tell you the name of that. Otherwise, you know, if it doesn't have a screen, like...
You have to remember the number.
You have to remember, I'm on channel one and that's all you have. You know, you set up your talk groups, your contacts, and then you set up your frequencies, your channels, and again, it's actually pretty simple. Once you get into it, it's much like traditional analog radio, but then you do have to get the zones. If you only set up the channels, it would not work. The channels have to be assigned to the zone, and you can add and remove, which is pretty cool. You know, let's just get rid of all these channels. Now I only have one to worry about on this radio. You can do that. It actually ended up being not as complicated as I originally anticipated.
And it gives us a lot of flexibility that analog systems didn't. But there is a complexity difference, and there is a price difference. Now, do you want to say how many people we're planning on getting radios for, or how many radios do you think we're going to have in this group and on this repeater?
I've got about 20 radios at the moment.
We could support way more.
Yeah. Some of those are high terras that actually don't support encryption, so I may not be using those. We may sell those and replace them with different ones. But we have a lot of people that could potentially use radios.
And these radios are more expensive.
Yeah.
So the repeater is something where that adds a significant amount of value. Yes. Owning our own repeater and yep. knowing that we can support it. We can put it in a place that we control. We can make sure that it has a generator with fuel or solar cells and batteries. Like yep. we can be responsible and confident that that thing works without power. And then we can be confident that our radios are set up to work on it and we can understand, David can understand that system for us, which is very important. But these radios do cost more than Baofengs.
Yes.
And the business license that we paid for costs more than an amateur license.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't cost more than 30 people going yeah. to get their amateur licenses. So,
well, and also with amateur, like we're going to use these for business.
Which you're
an
not
amateur license
amateur. Yeah.
is you're not supposed to use it for business at all. It's amateur by definition.
So let's say that some of the people watching have a bunch of friends that they want to be able to keep in touch with. Not just in disasters, but they want to have comms so that when they do stuff on the range, they can be coordinated. There's a significant tactical component to radios that have a push-to-talk button and let you communicate with a large group of people over right. a cell phone where you have to make a connection with the person or set up a Discord server and have enough bandwidth that you can actually all communicate and all that that implies.
Right.
There's a lot of value in having radios. There's a lot of value in groups of people having radios, especially when you're talking about HTs. When you're talking about handheld radios that don't talk very far, you are much better off using these radios for pre-organized communications with people that you already know and having a communication plan already set up. There are so many guys on the internet that buy a Baofeng and stick it in their plate carrier and they're good to go. But they actually have no communication plan. They don't know who they're trying to talk to. They don't know what frequencies they should be using. They haven't practiced with the equipment and they don't understand what's involved. These radios are going to be far more effective if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
but they're even going to be more effective if you have a plan. And if you have people to talk to that you already are friends with.
Yeah, that said, let's say you did have these and you were all kitted up and you were going to go do disaster relief. Let's say there was a huge hurricane. I would carry this for talking to people that, like, and these are immersive, you can dunk these in water. These are very durable. These are great. I would carry this for talking to my team. But I would also want to have at least one, like that UV5R, that is field programmable. I don't need a programming cable on a laptop. This one's out of battery, but like I can turn it on and I can just punch in the frequency I want. And it's really quick and dirty, but you know, for you know, if there's someone out there with a Amazon, you know, a Walmart bubble pack radio, I could punch in FRS channel 1 and I could talk to that person.
And technically you could program these into this.
I could.
But that would require that you switch away from the channel that your buddies are on.
Yeah, and so, you know, if you're gonna not do any prior work and just grab something to throw in your plate carrier or whatever, your get home bag, the UV5R or an equivalent, you know, field programmable ham radio is a great choice. But in the moment, you probably won't know how to program it at all or get anything done with it. You really have to work on this ahead of time. It's not something you can kind of throw in your preps and hope that maybe one day you'll know how to use it without the internet to help you.
Yeah.
That's not a good plan.
Let's talk a little bit about the cost difference, because Baofengs are dirt cheap.
Yep.
We're not telling you not to buy Baofengs, not to have them charged, not to have the manual printed out, not to have some experience messing with it, not to have a few of them so that you can hand them out and you can use them in emergencies.
It's like
as backup, because they're not as sturdy.
It's like as these. It's like this is an AR-15. And this is a 22.
Yeah.
Everyone's got to have some 22s. It's not a battle rifle, but it's a utility gun, and it's a fantastic utility gun that does a lot of stuff. It's just not this. Now, that said, this radio here, I think I used this one as my firefighting radio for a while. I didn't.
It looks like it.
I never really got it programmed up to transmit to our repeater, but we didn't have enough power to transmit to the repeater anyway. It didn't really matter. This was a listening device for getting details on the call as we were going. And, you know, we used a number of them. They held up really well, all things considered, considering, you know, the wetness and the getting bonked around and stuff that they endured. So I would, you know, I've seen these in Syria and places like that in pictures.
They're remarkably
ubiquitous. People are using them as battlefield radios. So don't think, I can't use this, I have to use this. No, there's a lot of utility in this. But cost difference. You can pick these up on Amazon for like $25. New, the PD-782, which is what this is. Oh no, that's a 7, this is a 702, this is a 782. These run about $800 new. And then the repeater is more. Now, you can get them used in the $200 to $400 range, which is still a lot of money. You can get something like this with no screen in the more like $100 range.
What about the 500 series?
Yeah, the 500 series are, $7,500 on eBay when you can find them.
Yeah. And you end up with a radio that is far more durable.
Yep.
You end up with a radio that is, it's got some more usefulness to it if you have that pre-assembled team and
right.
You have a plan, a communications plan to go with your other
right.
plans that you have. That starts to be a really, really useful thing. So if you're serious about being able to communicate with your team and you already have a team, you should consider this. The other thing that's cool about it is there's a bunch of people at T-Rex who are not going to get their ham radio licenses.
Right.
They just aren't. They're too busy, and finding the time for it is problematic. We're not allowed to use amateur radio for the business use that we actually have as a business. And so having our company have a business band license where we own the right to use some frequencies
is pretty handy.
And we can just hand these to people who work for the company, and it's something that they can now use legally without any difficulties.
Right.
Is really valuable. And if you have a gun club with 20 guys in it, there's going to be guys in there that cannot make the time, especially this year with the testing issues.
Yeah.
You cannot make the time to go get a ham radio license. And a gun club spending $170, I think, for a 10-year business license.
So the way it works is when you go to register a business license, there's a couple different paths you can take. And there's these frequencies that you have to get allocated to you. And basically at that point, you're buying a frequency and you are the only user for that frequency in that area. And that's more expensive because it requires a frequency coordinator and stuff like that. So that's more expensive. But there's also these other frequencies called itinerant frequencies that are sort of available. It's part of this pool that's kind of no coordination needed, kind of anybody can use it. Also, you can use those frequencies around the country, as I understand, or at least around the state. So it's more flexible, but there's no guarantee that when you get that frequency, you're going to be the only one on that frequency. There might be a couple other businesses that have said, hey, I want to register these four frequencies, and maybe they got number, you know, your number one is their number three, and you know, it doesn't really matter, but you should have backups. You can go register itinerant frequencies for, if you do the paperwork yourself, I want to say it's about $200. We went to and there's some tutorials out there on the internet that actually will walk you through going and doing your paperwork to get your frequency. I have a PDF open here. I think it's the how to do Part 90 legally. And if you Google around, you'll find some of these tutorials. Yeah. And I just decided I didn't have time to wade through the FCC's website and actually do the stuff.
No one does.
I went and started poking with their website. I was like, this is really antiquated. I don't want to monkey with this.
Which is true of amateur stuff, too. It's very antiquated.
Yeah. We used a company called Atlantic Radio, which is based in Florida. And I think we paid $450 to register a handful of frequencies. And that's good for 10 years. So if you have a whole bunch of people, you have a business purpose that's articulable, you can get one of these. It's really not that expensive in the grand scheme of things. And then you can start doing your DMR and your digital stuff on that and your encryption, and you're golden. Now, one other thing. We're using Hyteras, not Motorola's. We bought some Motorola's. The problem with Motorola is...
there's many problems.
They're super totalitarian in my reading experience, not programming experience. The programming software, I want to say it's like $200 or $300 for like a 3-year license. And so if you only want to program up a few radios and be able to change them regularly, suddenly that's way too expensive. The Hytera software is pretty much free if you're buying Hytera radios. Some companies are super protective of their customer programming software. Other companies they kind of don't really care. They kind of give it away for free. And that is a part of it. You know, you can't just pick a radio that's really cool. Like these XPR 6500s are really cool. And you can find them online for like $100 or $200. And they're good DMR radios and they're durable and stuff. But programming them is a big headache.
And Motorola makes it that way on purpose because they are jerks. And they treat other companies like they are jerks.
So Hytera is the Motorola of China. And that's not our favorite thing about them. But they fight with Motorola a lot, and they have constant lawsuits back
and forth. That is our favorite thing about them. Well, it's fun to watch anyway.
Well, like here's one of the scummy things that Motorola does. So a department goes and buys radios like this. So this is like, I think this is like an $800 or $900 radio new. I could be wrong on that. And, you know, so the department has these radios. They use them for 5 years, and they decide to upgrade. Well, the new XPR radios that Motorola is selling are like $5,000 a pop. So they say, you know what? We'll do a trade-in for you. You give us your old radios, which Motorola then promptly destroys. You give us your old radios, and we'll sell you these new ones a little bit cheaper. And the way it works is they go and get a grant from FEMA, and I think radios are like 90% grantable.
Yes.
So that $5,000 radio only costs the department $500 and a trade-in. So these radios that could get passed down to other end users get taken and destroyed, and then our tax dollars are used to pay for that overblown, wildly expensive, and super cool radio.
And Motorola spends a bunch of that money that they made hiring lawyers to go and lobby so that there are a bunch of new rules and regulations for law enforcement and public safety radios that they get the contracts for and they make the grant applications for and they make the grant money on to buy more lawyers to do more lobbying to maintain the monopoly that they have in that space.
And I don't really know how it all works. You know,
that's the whole plan.
Yeah.
You don't know how it works.
It's a grand conspiracy theory, but it probably isn't.
Yeah.
So Motorola is very cool. I wish I had a contact that had the software that could just program these for me. But the problem is, you know, I can program these whenever I want. And if we have a slight tweak in our needs, I just be like, hey, I'll add another contact. I'll add another frequency or, you know, whatever. I need to change the encryption key. I can change the encryption key. That's one of the other cool things about this. Let's say we have an employee Well, let's say we have one of these radios stolen, you know? They have all our settings now. Well, they don't have our encryption key. The encryption key is encrypted on the radio, so they don't actually have that. If we go and change our encryption key, now their radio can't listen to or talk to our radios effectively. They could probably kind of sort of jam, but that's about it.
Yeah. There's also, commercial radios have the ability to remotely stun or kill, and I don't know exactly how that works with our repeater, but it's something that our repeater can do, and it's a function that these radios have.
Yeah, there's software that lets you program the radios over the air, like, oh no, a radio got stolen. Okay, first, let's stun or kill that radio. Like, let's say we don't know if it's stolen. It may just be lost. We'll stun that radio. It won't even be able to talk anymore or listen. And then if we recover it, we can unstun it, or we could kill it. We could permanently destroy it remotely. And then we could push over the air new programming instructions to our fleet of radios.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of features that make these things totally worth it, especially when you buy them used.
Yes.
But you have to actually have the kind of plan that takes those things into account to get the benefit. But it's something that you should really, really think through. Yeah. Who is on your team? What are you going to be doing? What sort of plan, what sort of features, what sort of resources do you have available? So T-Rex is a company that is big enough that it justifies having some radios.
Yep.
Radios were already going to be something that we did personally. It was already going to be something that we were going to do with the people inside of T-Rex as friends who want to be able to communicate with each other and do disaster relief and stuff like that. So it was already on our to-do list. There was already the infrastructure of that friend group to do that stuff. But T-Rex needing radios for some of our video production work and some of our organizational work and some of our range work justifies doing enough research that we made the jump from hobby amateur radio stuff over to the commercial business band radios. And the advantages are pretty significant, and they're definitely worth thinking of. You just have to know what you're getting into in terms of the complexity and in terms of the extra money, because it is extra money. But you are getting some significant benefits when you pay that extra money.
That said, if you just want some convenient communications for your family or your shooting group or whatever, it is still really, really hard, to beat cell phones. I mean, they are the most amazing radios that exist currently. Mm-hmm. They're the most amazing radios that exist currently that you can buy. That there are some other stuff. But.
And it's frustrating how much research and development and invention goes into building new cell phone radios and new cell phone radio protocols, and how little actually goes into ham radio development. There is some, but it's not a lot.
It's a fraction.
And how much goes into commercial radio development. There is some, but it's a fraction. And a lot of that research is dependent upon building a large monopoly that capitalizes upon the military-industrial complex or whatever. To make money. It's really frustrating to me that the amateur radio rules are so old and so arbitrary in some ways. Like there are rules against encryption. We already talked about that. There are rules against forwarding of messages on certain bands, which is how a lot of stuff actually works. There's even speed limits on how quickly you can transmit data. And it's like pre-dial-up internet speeds, baud limits on a bunch
and
of stuff.
There's also rules on ham radio, like no transmission of music.
Oh, certainly not.
Unless
it's playing on a spacecraft.
Yes.
Then it's okay. That's an important question that you need to remember the correct answer to when you take your ham radio test.
Yeah.
Because those are the rules.
Because so astronauts need music or something. I don't know.
Well, you know, they're technically like... Does it count as international waters when you're
orbit? There's some sort of ham radio radio on the International Space Station.
Yes.
And actually, you can use a 5-watt handheld radio to talk to the space station. And I think they transmit music as part of their
when the astronauts are too busy to just talk to ham radio.
It's something like that, and that's why they have that carve out or something. Yeah. So, basically, this is all super cool. These are more durable than cell phones as a general rule. They let you do things that cell phones won't let you do. They have resiliency. You know, if everything goes down, there's no power, you have comms still. They're super convenient compared to cell phones. Like, if I want to send a message on my phone, it's multiple clicks to get there. With this radio, I dial the dial to where I want it, and I push the button, and the message goes through. And that's kind of all there is to it. And that's what makes them so awesome. If you just have to send a message right now, it's a life or death matter, radios still have the edge over cell phones because, you know, unlocking your phone, going to the app, finding the app, sure, finding the place in the app, doing the thing is too much time.
Assuming that you have internet to begin with. So
exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about another aspect of this, which is probably a good pessimistic place to end this. I don't know if you've been paying much attention because it's been kind of busy, but Twitter and Facebook have blocked people from sharing certain news articles about a certain presidential candidate's son. So you're not allowed to talk about certain things on Facebook and Instagram. So there's a fair amount of deplatforming that we're already seeing on the internet.
I'm glad they're protecting Barron's privacy. That's a good thing.
Yes. Well, you made the logical assumption, I'm sure. Yes, that's exactly what I was talking about. But one of the things that we haven't seen a whole lot of is, when will David Botkin lose his AT&T privileges?
Right.
When will I be deplatformed from Verizon for my aberrant Second Amendment beliefs? If Amy Comey Barrett is a Second Amendment extremist,
then what are we?
What are we? We're definitely people who are too dangerous to allow on regular cell phone networks.
We should lose our Second Amendment and First Amendment rights.
This is a conversation that's already happening. And it's a conversation that, if you take the wrong side of it, isn't allowed on certain social media platforms. And it's actually something that's coming to utilities. I'm not sure if you followed this, but California has been cutting off certain people's water and electricity and sewer if they think that they're having too many people in their homes and they're violating some of the COVID-related health mandates. So,
because there's no health problems with cutting off people's sewer.
Yes. Well, if you're having a party and you're violating the governor's rules,
right?
You get what you get. This is very important California principle. So
this is the road to the Black Death.
If the state is already targeting its political enemies by requiring that utilities turn off their water and their power, turning off internet access is something that is definitely on the horizon. So that is another reason to have alternative communications handy. And I'm being a little bit pessimistic, but if we're watching people turn off people's power and water because of violating little tiny rules, if we're seeing people who are not allowed to talk about certain news stories because of the political, the possible political damage of that news story, being kicked off of your internet provider is something that we're probably going to see next year.
Right.
It's something to bear in mind, as well as all the natural disaster stuff that happens. And just because it doesn't happen to most people most of the time doesn't mean that you shouldn't think about having radios.
Right. So, a couple action items. I would say everyone should get a couple really cheap China radios.
Absolutely.
And I say China radios just because I'm not aware of another nationality radio that exists that's good. I mean, these are so cheap, and they work so well in our experience. And then learn how to use them, start playing with them, programming them. You know, you can put these, as I understand it, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not your lawyer. As I understand it, you can put these on the MERS frequencies and use them totally legally. And you might be able to put them on the GMRS frequencies and use them legally as well if you go get that license. And they just extended the length of that license and made it better and stuff. I don't quite know all the rules because it just happened only 3 years ago, which in FCC time is like super recent, and I didn't hear about it until just a couple weeks ago. But go get some of these and then start counting the costs of looking at systems, you know, DMR radios with more features. You know, do you have the group of people that can actually make use of it?
If you don't, start building that group of people.
Right, and that's kind of one of the big thing is you're talking radios. It implies you must have friends to talk to, or else you're just buying tactical clutter for your garage. Too many people do that. You know, go get the friends. Meet people in your local community that you can actually talk to with stuff like this, and you actually have a reason to talk to. You know, ideally, you go to the range and you make use of it. You practice it. You do other things, and you practice your radio stuff. But count the cost on these. Don't just jump into DMR radios because they're cool and they'll look awesome on your kit. Don't do it unless you're actually going to do it right and actually know how to program it and stuff. Like, I bought these radios. It was kind of sort of for props for our media channel, and I thought, oh, I'll figure out how to program them. And that was like 3 years ago or something, and I never programmed them because the software was too expensive and I didn't have time. And so count the cost,
Have a plan.
Have a plan.
Have friends.
But move in that direction. You know what we really need to do a video on?
What's that?
We need to do a video on something like Signal, Wire, or one of these other Telegram, one of these other chat
yes.
apps. And it would actually really be good to do that before the election, but I think it's kind of too late for that, maybe.
If there is someone who is a security researcher that knows something about that and can talk about the crypto aspect, get in touch with us.
Yeah.
The best way to contact us is probably teams@trex-arms.com or trextalk@trex-arms.com. That would be a really good thing to talk about because there is going to be there's going to be some value in talking over the internet for sure. Because going from an analog handheld radio to a digital commercial handheld radio is a lot of time and effort and money and skill. Mm-hmm. Going to something like HF that does let you talk around the country or around the world takes a whole new level of skill and radio understanding that's going to be very difficult to build in a short amount of time. So as long as the internet works, you can talk to people on the other side of the world super easily. And doing so with some level of privacy and security is extremely important.
Yeah,
we should get on that.
Yeah, so if you know about that, let us know. We're gonna do our own research and try to figure out what's the best app to move everyone towards. We use Microsoft Teams quite a bit. Interestingly, Teams is just releasing. It's kind of still beta. This doesn't apply to most people, but they're actually deploying a little walkie-talkie app that's built into Microsoft Teams. And that's kind of cool.
There's a bunch of things that are out there that are like that. I really liked Discord, and I still kind of do from a functionality standpoint, but they've been deplatforming people. They kicked off a fairly large group of people, many of whom I know personally, for being associated with other people that I know personally, and those guys are not allowed on Discord in any way, shape, or form, period, because of political stuff that was completely untrue. So figuring out some of this stuff is very important. And we're probably not going to be on YouTube for forever either. I actually anticipate there being some crackdowns as things start happening around some event next week or so that I forget what it is.
Right.
Election meddling is really, really a problem, and it has to be stopped by any and all means. So the T-Rex YouTube channel may not last forever, but... this conversation that we are having and all of the live conversations that we have at T-Rex Talks are also a podcast that you can search for. And if you go to our website, you can sign up for our newsletter. Our newsletter is one of the only communication...
things that's like really secure.
That's under our control. Everything else is running on somebody else's platform.
Email newsletters are kind of like HF radio. Goes really far, really hard to shut down. So if you're not on our email newsletter, go get on it.
That's the way we're going to keep in touch with people if everything else goes away. And the possibility of other stuff going away totally exists. So on that very cheerful note, please enjoy the rest of your week.
Yep.
I am not sure what the next live stream is going to be about because there's just no telling what's going to happen between now and then. But it's going to be interesting and it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Thanks for watching. And we'll talk to you later.
Stay safe. Stay sane.